Good morning and welcome to Hockey Development Talk. Today I'm with the guru, the legend that is Kevin Heath. Morning, Kevin.
I've never been called a guru before. That's exciting.
That's just what I think you are. So,
Good morning, Kevin.
For me, you are the guru. You are the legend of the player pathway. You certainly know triple, quadruple the amount of information that I know. And I just felt that this sort of podcast here was a good place to have that chat, pass on your knowledge and experiences and see what people have to think. So, morning, do you want to explain who you are and your roles within the player pathway?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, appreciate the opportunity and the chance to have a chat. It seems a while since we've been able to do that properly. So
it does. Yeah, why not record it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's good. My role is within the Midlands is performance director is the title that I'm given. What that actually equates to is spending a lot of time on the ground working with coaches. Probably coach manager is probably a better title, I would say, where you spend a lot of time liaising with coaches about how we coach, what we coach, how we can improve what we do. And a lot of liaison work between AC coaches, some DC coaches and PC coaches, and how we try and make the pathway sort of come to life, really.
Yeah, no, I would just say on record, I think you do that very well. Having worked with you for a couple of seasons here, you know, there was a definitely... work that was done between development centre, academy centre, performance centre to try and create that, I would say, not team, but more togetherness, more bonding. Yeah. And it wasn't such a big leap. So, you know, big well done from me on that, because I think
I suppose one of the things which I think helps to bring that to life is because with the roles that I do, just to fill out a little bit more, I'm a full-time coach. I've been doing this for about 10 years now, full time. In order to fill those hours, I coach at a couple of DCs. So back in the day, 2007-08, when JDCs sort of first started work locally, putting that one into place, the North Staffordshire JDC. Then through club work, working in different areas, did some work in Derbyshire. So I did some work at the DC stuff work there as well. I still do that. So I'm still at that grassroots level of the starter stuff with the DCs, then done the AC stuff and still continue to do the AC stuff as well. So I try and have a foot in every camp. I think that keeps you grounded. I enjoy that coaching as well. I think that's fabulous. Being able to work with kids when they first started in the pathway and with parents as well. What is the pathway? What is the single system prior to that? And what is county coaching before that? That was the whole sort of gamut of it. And I think if you get your hands dirty and you go and do that grassroots stuff, you have a better understanding of what the challenges are that everybody faces.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. I think that's definitely a positive about you and you being in that role is the fact that you do get your hands dirty. You are getting stuck in at different levels to try and understand those successes and challenges. I think one of the things you raised actually there was really interesting. We used to have county training. We used to have the single system. We've now got the player pathway. What is it? For those people out there that, you know, there's clubs out there that really struggle with it. There's parents, there's players, there's coaches. To you, what is the player pathway?
What is the player pathway?
Sorry. Probably should have asked that question before we came online a little bit.
What is the player pathway?
I mean, for me, I'll tell you what my understanding is. It's an environment where we want the child to reach their potential, and we don't know what that potential is. So it might be their potential is that we get them to stage one, development centre, and that's they've reached their potential just by getting them to there. We've taken them out of a comfy environment, club, school, got them to there.
Yeah.
Or we're trying to get them into England squad, you know, reach their potential and get to there. That's my understanding of it, but... I'm not sure whether that's 100% fully what it is. I'm just curious from you, really. What's your understanding of it? Obviously, you're massively involved in it. So, what are you trying to achieve with that player pathway?
I suppose, yeah, the thing that sort of drives me constantly with this is that that the end in mind statement of producing an oversupply of international standard athletes and junior athletes, and that has to be the the driving thing, that the back in my mind, how can we be the best that we possibly can be, and how can we best support that oversupply and that development?
Yeah.
The tough part with that is, you, realistically, you might be looking at a handful of athletes. So we've got thousands of kids all going through, and we might just get one or two that are going to go through and make a difference and get through to Olympic finals and all that stuff. Which, so the reality of that is, how does that work at DC level, at club level? How does it come all the way back down? And where are those athletes? And how do we find them? How do we discover them? How do we support them, help them on all that part? Which is key. And I strongly believe that those, that next athlete that's going to win us the gold medal could come from your local DC just around the corner.
Yeah.
And I think the important part with all that is giving them the opportunity to grow and develop and to come through.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, to enable that then to happen, if we talk about the process one is a development centre. So, for instance, you said about, was it North Staffs that you mentioned a minute ago there?
Yeah.
North Staffs, they've got a development centre. It's running from, and we'll look at when they run in a moment, but they're running from X to Y, and you need people to feed into that development centre. So for me, the feeding in is a school or is a club. So there needs to be a relationship between the development centre and the club and school. So I think my question to you is, how have you created that relationship so that clubs, schools do feed into you? And
I think that's one of the most challenging bits, isn't it, of the whole process as it's gone through. So one of the main differences, I think, from the player pathway point of view is the time of year and the timing of when it's delivered.
Yeah,
I think that is one of the things that is the biggest challenge. The just jumping backwards slightly, the single system had a slightly more balanced calendar approach of how it went through. You do development centre, JDC, in one period of the calendar, then you did county, JAC, the next part of the calendar, and then JRPC in the summer part. So there was a natural logical progression from a timeline point of view. So that was more ordered from a pathway point of view. However, the contact time and the development opportunities for the players within that wasn't possibly being maximised. So one of the big drivers with the player pathway as it is now is that you get to spend longer at the environment which is appropriate for you at your level of development.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is a big driver. So rather than it just being, we'll come along at certain two or three times a year and take your key players and move them along to this next part and we'll do this bit with them, it's like, here's something which is going to support the development all the way through. That sits as an overarching principle really, really well with me. That if you're an England player, this is your environment and this is where you train and you have contact time all the way through the hockey calendar, get that. Performance centre, the level below that, you have contact time all the way through the year. And similarly with the AC and the county stuff, so that there's a longer AC programme which works, which I can see that sits a lot better. Mm-hmm. The challenge, going back to what you said before, is how do you get in? What's that connectivity and how does that support network of the pathway support club, school, and get that engagement right? And that's an ongoing challenge. And at local level with the DC stuff that we do here in Derbyshire and in North Staffordshire, stuff we do here, then there's a lot of we've had to improve our communications, our transparency and openness of how we communicate with schools, with teachers, with clubs, and try to make that openness as easy and as accessible to get to as possible. It's easier said than done. Beth Cartledge, who runs our DC up here, she does a fabulous job of mail shotting, emailing, and making it as exciting and as accessible as possible. And that's going out to a wide range of people then. So it's going into that database of people, that's going into schools, it's going into clubs. We try and manage the dates as sensibly as we can.
Mm-hmm.
I know you touched on the calendar start before. So that when the clubs have got festivals on, or the clubs have got their intos or all the different things that they're doing, it's a silly time to go and put our activity on when they're busy.
Yeah.
So that's just, so it's like, yeah, okay, we'll bend and we'll fit in with you. and try to run it in a complementary way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say as the longer that Bev's pushed harder to be transparent, it has helped. And we've now got a feed in from 15, 20 schools.
Brilliant.
Five clubs that are supporting in a complementary way. And yeah, it works. It works. Okay. It's one of the key bits we're looking for from this as well is it's sustainable.
Of course. Yep.
Because that was one of the challenges we faced right at the beginning is how do you afford to pay for coaches, pay for your pitch hire? And
mm-hmm.
if you've got, as a worst case example, if you've got four or five kids there on a Sunday morning, you go in this economically, this doesn't make sense. Doesn't
make sense. No. So how do you achieve that? So when does the development centre, let's specifically stay with development centre, you've got these schools feeding in, you've got the clubs feeding in, you've improved the communication, you're hopefully now going to get X amount of kids coming to stage one that says, I want to have a go. Because ultimately, any kid can apply to be part of the development centre, correct?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I think was a challenge from a coaching point of view. So from a DC point of view, we had a very open door policy.
Yeah.
And that applied to age banding and ability levels.
Yeah.
And we sort of took it as, in some cases, we were signposting back the other way because we would be having feeding from schools that would be saying, yeah, this is great. We'll send some along. We've done a taster session at school or an introduction session. And what's the next step? And we've been the more accessible part because the timings have been right. And they said, great, we'll send them along to a development centre. Can they come? Mm-hmm. Shin pads, gum shield, right, off we go. We'll sort sticks out, get them playing, that sort of stuff. And it's worked. And then we've said, right, and then can we signpost you back now to a club?
Yes. Yeah.
So it can be a two-way thing. So as well as getting the club players, then there's entry level going back the other way as well, which is beneficial and has worked quite well.
Brilliant. I mean, that's a nice little triangle, isn't it? A kid comes from a school, they come to you at development centre, not playing at a club yet, but actually what you've done is then you've said, well, you're living here, these are your local clubs, go give them a try. I think that's a fantastic triangle that probably doesn't always happen within the player pathway, and people don't realise that could happen within the player pathway either. So, nice. Brilliant.
I think we've been quite fortunate as well because Bev, who runs the centre there, she's a PC coach and has been a JLPC coach prior to that, as well as an AC coach. So, like myself, we've probably had about 8 or 9 coaches that have come through the centre. The two of us have been doing it since for 10 years, but we've always had other coaches coming in and around and working with us. But there's been a continuity of coaching and delivery and also representation of what you might need to do for the next level.
Yeah.
So the jump to go from DC to AC is not that painful. it's a natural progression, so it's not scary. It's sort of like, oh yeah, we've done this already, or we've done similar to this, and it's just a slightly higher standard, but it's a continuation of the work that you've been doing.
Mm-hmm. So just with development center, I did a little bit of looking back on that, and it's roughly 10 hours, isn't it? 8 to 10 hours delivery, obviously weather dependent.
That
and obviously financially dependent, that's how it works. So they do that, and then from there, if you've got how many kids go through to academy center, so is there a limit, or is it just if we feel they're good enough, you push them to that next step?
So the two DCs that I work with, Derbyshire and the Staffordshire ones, it was a mixture of we had at North Staffs, we came up with a program where I think you could do up to 18 hours.
Right. Okay.
But that was partly driven by if it's self-financing and it works.
Yeah.
And it was giving an offer. Basically, kids said, can we just keep going? Can we do more? We love it.
And you wouldn't want to say no, would you? If it is self-financing and it is paying for the coaches, it's paying for the pitches, why not do more than the guidance says 8 to 10 hours and you've been able to offer more? Awesome.
So, well, the thing is as well, we were doing it at a time of year when there wasn't a conflict.
Yeah.
So that is one of the kids weren't having to make a choice of whether we do this or whether we do club or whether we do school. We did it at a time when, so the main conflict would be whether they do athletics or cricket because we'd be doing it in the summer.
Yeah.
So from our point of view, it was nice coaching because it's in better weather.
Yeah. Shorts on, suntan.
yeah, absolutely. You know, so pitches are free.
Yeah,
you got accessibility to pitches. It's easy to get on in that time of year, and it's nicer coaching, and it's just a nice environment for the kids to train and to play in.
Brilliant. So
we've sort of adapted that rather than sort of waiting to be told when we had to do sessions. We just sort of cracked on and made it work.
And it works for you. Might not work for every other area, but again, other people might be listening to this and they go, didn't realise that we could do that, didn't know. So I think that's a really nice thing. So just some successes there is that you do have schools, you do have clubs feeding into you. The challenge was probably around communication, but you've overcome that with someone coming in. One of the other challenges that I've seen that other areas face is the conflict of running it at certain times and stuff like that. So I think that's a nice little bit of info that you've given around there. So that's good. And I'll tell you what, something I did witness with regards to the development centre was clubs and schools were invited to September, were invited to enter a festival. So a county held a festival, clubs and schools were invited to put 7-a-side team in or whatever it was, boys one area, girls another, obviously the different age groups whatsoever. That really worked for them. So they started with a festival. Every kid, every parent got spoken to around the player pathway. And this is when the pathway development centres were in. So there were 6 sessions, hours long, blah, blah, blah. I felt that was a nice way of opening up their development centre. And again, slightly different to how you've done it, but it's a way that managed to work for them.
I thought a similar sort of crossover is the way that we handle the transition from how do you go from DC to AC was both DCs are counties that work with. We had a early September crossover. Similar idea that there was AC festivals at the beginning of the cycle, of the AC cycle, which was basically populated by the kids from the DCs that had been training over the summer.
That's good.
So it was quite a nice sort of handover of how do you populate your ACs. So there'd be some assessment festival game get together sort of ideas of all the kids that are taking part. And there was a bit where, it's very early in the cycle. So originally because the county cycle historically would have been January.
Yes.
Starting that in September was sort of like, oof, that's a bit early. We haven't really had a lot of time with the kids. Crikey, we don't really know who they are. Have we got the contact details? Is everybody up to speed? Is everybody online? But by doing all that process stuff earlier in the summer with the DC stuff, it was just a natural progression of here's the next thing that we're doing.
That's good.
Populated it quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's, if that works, then, you know, why change it? That for me is obviously working for those people there. Just around that then, so development centre, you've got coaches, you've got kids, obviously you're engaging parents as well. Coaching, what sort of, don't be specific about the coaching sessions, but who are the coaches and what are they sort of delivering? Is that coordinated by yourself as the performance director? How does that work? So roughly.
In DC land or AC land?
In DC land, talking about DC, stage one of this whole process, you know, where did you get your coaches from? They're just club coaches coming in? Are they people from performance centre? Where did you get them?
I suppose it's a nice mixture. I've been fortunate that I've had a lot of contacts. So as soon as you put advertised on the England Hockey website, you get all kinds of CVs and applications coming into you. So you get lots of a nice network of people. There's a double whammy here we do with this because. So this happens for both Derbyshire and Staffordshire. We've got a group of very experienced coaches that coach at various levels that are in schools or in PC, JLPC, whatever. So there's a framework there already.
Yeah.
The temptation is to overload those coaches because typically they're good coaches that are keen, that can do loads, and the temptation is to just get them to do everything.
Yeah.
But I think that gives you your skeleton to start with. And what I'm trying to do as much as possible is to bring in new coaches, the enthusiastic ones, the ones that are just qualified or just done courses. And it's like, right, you need your experience. How do you start?
Yeah.
It's an absolute ideal way to say, come down on Friday evening when we've got a session and we've got a couple of hours there and get involved. And And it's that double whammy thing. How do you get the experience?
Wow. True. True.
You've got to put people in, haven't you? And give them the opportunity. And from that, then originally, probably wasn't always the case. Going back sort of 10 years ago, there'd probably be a narrower group of people trying to make it work.
Right. Okay. I'd say so it's just been about broadening your communications with coaches that are keen, that want to sort of support, but also without putting words into your mouth, mentoring. I can imagine that you're not just going to put them in, knowing you as I do, you're not just going to put them in and say, right, I want you to deliver X. I imagine there's going to be some kind of mentoring going on, and you're sort of trying to get that info out of them. You're trying to draw the best out of those, without stating that's what you do. I'm assuming somewhere along the line that's sort of happening, whether it's you or whether it's more, or the, you know, the more experienced coaches doing that. I don't know, but I could imagine, Kevin, you're not just going to dump a coach in and say, I want you to deliver that to that group, and then 6 weeks later you come back and go, how's it gone? So
yeah, I think that's one of the big learning things that's come from the pathway stuff at PC, is that the shared experience of coaches working together is a massive learning tool for all of us. For all of us, that ability to, what's the topic? What's the session plan? How are we going to deliver it? Who are you delivering it to? How do we make it fit? What's appropriate? How, and developing in those sessions. So that mixture of mentoring and doing it on job.
Yeah.
Finding talent of coaches and then showing them that, you know, I make loads of mistakes. I get loads of things wrong. I pitch things at the wrong level, either too quick or too slow. That happens. That's just the normal stuff that goes on. So when you get somebody who's like, just finished the course and they're sort of really eager and keen working alongside you, and you're 20 minutes in going, uh-oh, I've got this wrong, need to change this one, and they're going, really, wow, and you sort of go, well, yeah, because that's coaching, that's
real life. Yeah, it's real life.
And they and they enjoy that, and then, well, you can see that's working, because then they're keen to do more courses, to do more sessions, to help engage and progress and develop. And that's how we're... So we use it as a coach development tool as much as a player development tool, yeah.
Yeah. Which I must say is very strong. I think that's very strong in the Midlands group that are, you know, from what I witnessed, was a very strong coach development, people sharing ideas with others in a very informal format as well. It wasn't like formal assessment, sit down, fill out paper. It was just chat. And it was really good to sort of bounce off people different ideas and understand where they were coming from. I think that's really strong, really strong.
I think that's helped with engagement with schools as well, you know, because some of the coaches we've had come in are sort of enthusiastic, non-specialist teachers. That how do I make this next step and stuff, and when those people start to get involved with you, because what I found was there is they had far higher skills of teaching and education than we have as pure hockey coaches. So that cross linkage of delivery styles and delivered methodology,
for sure.
Just because they might not be a national league top coach or an international player doesn't mean they're not brilliant at working with a group of kids.
Absolutely not. They'll probably have some really good ways of being interacting, ways of being able to draw that information out from the child that's going to help them progress. And I think what we said at the beginning was we're trying to get these kids to reach their potential, and we don't know what that potential is, and they're probably very, very good at trying to find out what a potential child has in different learning ways. So
I've learned loads more of people like that. It's like, yep, bank that one. That's the other one we'll put in the locker. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, right. Let's talk about Academy Centre. So we've done Development Centre. We've progressed. As a child, as a parent, I've now got to take my kid to Academy Centre. What's the difference, and how does that work with you at the moment?
So the AC cycle, I think that's one of the nice parts, is that having done a reasonable amount of work with Sally Mapplin, some of the England guys, about trying to get that hockey calendar sorted out, that is a piece of work, trying to get that all together. I look at that spreadsheet and I go, wow, that takes some coordinating and working out. But one of the key bits with that is, though, that there's time to do both. So from a coaching point of view, you can do AC and you can do PC, and there's only a couple of times it sort of crosses over. So in AC world within the Midlands, I'm very active for that, and I encourage as many PC coaches as possible to get involved with AC world. And I think there's been a lot of really good practice that we're developing at PC and higher that's coming into AC. that cross-fertilization, and that's really good. From my own personal point of view, I'm working with so I've done two different models with this. I'm intrigued to see. I was thinking about this this week. I've done two different models. So originally, when I first started doing county coaching, that was about 16 years ago.
Wow. 15 years ago. That's why you're the guru, Kevin. Because you
grey hair. and at the time, then it was so. I started off with Staffordshire under 13 girls, for argument's sake, because that's where my daughters were playing, and that's how I got into coaching. Because it's like, right, go on then, coach your daughters and look after them and take them through. And I took them through at 14, 15, 16, 17s, and I stayed with that teen group. And that was the cycle that we went through at the time, is that's your group of players, you stay with them.
Yes.
I then went and coached my son's county team, sort of 13, 14, and took them through for another 3, 4, 5 years. And that was sort of seen as a model around that time. Get to know the group, get to stay with them, develop and bring them through. So I did that for a period of time. The current model that I'm working with is that I take an age group, and then so I work with the under 13s in Derbyshire, and I stay with that age group. So it's just staying under 13. So every year we're handing over players to other age groups.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Pros and cons. The bit I like working with the 13s is that we've made that age group slightly younger as part of the linkage to the DC stuff. So we'll have children coming in that are 10, 11. As well as the 12s.
Okay. And I'll
have them for, so I get a longer contact time with them as a periodization thing, but they're introduced to it in a measured, manageable way for 2 or 3 years for some of them. Others you get as 12-year-olds, you have them for a 12-month cycle, and then you work with them and we they go to a new set of coaches at 14s and they go through. It's interesting, I have different parts. I did wonder whether some of the kids going back 10 years ago, whether they're getting fed up with the sight of you because it's been the same county coach for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, isn't it? You know, I've seen both models in place at different regions, and I wouldn't know which was the best. Well, is there the best model? I wouldn't know. I mean, that would probably be an interesting discussion, and it might come out after this with loads of people contacting and going, we use this model and it works, or we use this model and actually now you've just spoken about it, I think we're going to have a look at another model. So
yeah,
I can understand how the model that you've got with the under 13s probably works really well, because you get to see a group for a short period of time. Well, a period of time. And then the following season, a majority of those kids change. They go to a new coach, and hopefully they're continually being challenged. There's not the same type of coach. But then the only negative of that is some of the info that you might have around certain players, some of the info that you might have around, you know, little Phil, he's more receptive to this. We need to drag him in. If you don't bring him in certain challenges, he drifts, or actually he creates problems, whatever else. So that there's kind of, it's a little bit like a school class, isn't it, that you have to hand over a huge document.
I think one of the big things that's enabled this to happen and to work better for, and I've been doing this about 4 or 5 years now, is that because we have more contact time, when you had your 12 hours and 4 or 5 sessions, you're desperate to sort of just about to get to know them and to get an understanding of how they work properly, and then you're handing them over. Oh, yeah. Whereas if you had longer with them, then you have that rapport and understanding of, so the current system where we start in September and I take them through till March, April, you've got the contact time. So I think this allows you to build that relationship and rapport with the players and the parents, and better understanding. So it always felt before you were just starting to really make some headway with players, and then you'd be right, you're handing them over. So, we're finished. Yeah. Started in January, finished in April. Crikey. Yeah. Too quick.
Yeah. No, I can understand that. So with contact hours then at Academy Centre, and again, it's only through the bits that I was looking at, is 40 to 50-ish hours. I've seen a few counties that deliver 40s, 50s. But that also involves competitions as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So how does the competitions work for you? Is it positive? Is it an area that could still be challenged? Or is it, you know, what are we trying to achieve with those competitions?
It's an interesting one, and I've been So this cycle, I've used a very different approach with our view to it. So under 13s in the Midlands, we run two age group teams.
Okay.
Yeah. So two teams, so a team A, team B, team one, team two type thing. And each team is of equal ability.
So it's not an A and a B.
It's not ranked. It's purely done on an equal share and opportunity. And then the festival stuff through the year, so from September, October through till sort of February, is non-competitive as such. There's no league tables, no scores are recorded, nothing is listed. It's not about winning. It's just about playing and just getting out on the pitch.
Yeah.
Then there's a little festival at the end where there is a little trophy given out and winners and stuff, and which is it's okay.
There's some word in there that really intrigues me. You've used the word festival, as I would use the word festival. Other areas use the word tournament, use the word competition. Do you feel that's where some of the this win at all cost sometimes can come from, because we are talking competition rather than using the word festival? And again, I'm not trying to stitch you up or anything. It's just more, I've had various discussions with people, and I do think wording is key. I think a parent acts differently around the word festival personally than they do a competition.
I one of the things that I tried to do this cycle more than I've done previously is to reframe what we're doing. So what's our definition of success?
Yeah.
So we've moved away completely from the scores. It's one of the things that picked up off Stuart Armstrong's podcast. I don't keep the scores, no interest in them at all.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I do set is a whole series of challenges for the players so that it is really, really meaningful.
Yeah.
But it can be meaningful in completely different ways. And what's evolved this year is a wider understanding within the group about what we're trying to achieve and what we're trying to do. Longer term principles and longer term goals, rather than did we win 3-0 or I'm just not interested in that as a learning thing at all. It's more about team principles, team learning ideas, and team development stuff. And the really rewarding thing with this, Gary, is I've thrown this back to the players as well. And to see, what do you want to get out of today?
Yeah.
So rather than it being my ideas and my thoughts about what we should be looking to do, you know, can we get the ball forward fast, early, and all this sort of stuff, it was, what do you want? What's important to you guys? And when we've thrown that back to the players, it's a mixture. There's a reflection of the coaching that we've been doing. So there's principles and buzzwords and things that come out, which is just good, because you sort of go, phew, it's been retained.
Yeah. Well, at least the wording has. Yeah.
But they were more conscious then about a whole range of different stuff, and so there was more holistic things coming into that, as well as the hockey sort of stuff.
Mm.
So after the first festival, for argument's sake, a couple of players fed back to me that they felt that whilst it was a really good day, the starting 11s and the sub rotations weren't always as fair as they could be.
Right. Okay.
Was interesting was it was the players and the team manager that were doing the subs. It wasn't the coaches. We weren't running that. We handed that over to them as their responsibility. And they came up with some suggestions then about how they could make it fairer, more equitable.
Right. Okay. And, what were they? Do you know? Can you remember what they were? Or?
Changing starting sevens.
Okay.
So there's a different team. So different teams started every time. So we moved away from the little Billy's the best player. He has to start. Well, doesn't have to.
And that.
So it's simple stuff. It's simple things. But it was when they all agreed though that doing rolling subs is really hard.
Yeah. It definitely is.
But as the team leaders though, these and that's the fabulous bit. You've got team leaders that are 10 and 11 coming back and going, phew, Kev, running subs is hard. Phew, thanks for that.
You now understand my challenge.
But then when you see them going off and doing the rotation boards and doing and coming up with strategies of how they were going to do it, and it was like, whoa, right.
Yeah.
And, and they were working out what lines they were playing in, so how they could do more efficient rotations and how they can do them. And on the third minute, you're going to swap with that one. On the fourth minute, we do the midfield rotation. Fifth minute, 14, you're going, crikey, O'Reilly, this is impressive.
Way more detailed than what the coach was going to do in the first place.
way more. But the key bit is, because they were driving it. And they were driving, and they were taking ownership of that. And I just thought, that's fabulous. Because they turned around and said, whilst it didn't always work, because they recognised that the game was chaotic and the times to do that didn't always work, they felt because they had ownership of it that it was fairer and more equitable.
No, that's good. That's good. I actually saw Greg Wade tweet around an Academy Centre festival. And again, obviously that's a Midlandsy-based one, where his boys had set themselves individual challenges, but they'd come up with also three team goals for the day, and they weren't about like scoring. There were the things that the team were trying to achieve in game one and then two and stuff like that. And do you know what? I believe that is so where we need to go. Like, I know that we've used it at Performance Centre. Sort of Brett introduced me to that when I first worked with him at Performance Centre. And it wasn't around the score. It was definitely around, right, what is this team going to achieve today? What are you going to achieve? And that was, it was only very, very small, but actually that was sort of like instilling in me those years ago then that that's definitely the way to go. And the kids learn so much more. They're in so much more ownership, and their discussions are around, well, we haven't done this. How are we going to do it then? And because we're still not doing this. So, and that was really good because it makes them focus on what's happening in the game rather than going, they didn't even know the score. So I remember being in Manchester and they had absolutely no idea of the score. And that for me was a real, I giggled because, you know, that's what I wanted. And that's what Brett wanted. We wanted them to be so focused on what we were trying to achieve with different forms of the game that they had no idea. They were like, who scored? Have we scored? Has anyone scored? And you just think, well, they were focusing so much on what was going on off the ball to not what was going on the ball, which was great. And that was the idea for them. They chose that. So that was great.
So one of the things that I touched on with this was, it was amazing to see the responses. We've had about four or five festivals now. Sadly, we didn't have one yesterday, which is a shame in the snow. But we've carried on layering in more and more of good practice and clear understanding. But one of the things that I've done with this as well is that we've communicated this out to the parents as well. Brilliant. So very, very clearly, we've said to the parents what our objectives are, how we're going to set out, how we're looking to do this. So we're about different team leaders in each festival. So we have two team leaders. We entered three teams and we have two leaders from each team. And they're the ones that cascade down the information and draw out the information from the players and come up with ideas and strategies and then relate back to us and then go back and put it in place and review it. And we've shared that with the parents as well. So as well as telling them all the hockey stuff that we've been doing through the sessions, we've let them be aware of the processes we're going through. So they're aware then the reason why the coach isn't coaching, running up and down the sideline and screaming and shouting is because it's part of a process. And we've had a few festivals where they're looking at the opposition. Sometimes you see coaches there that are enthusiastic, shall we say, with their coaching. And you see them looking at us and going, Kev, you're not really doing much. What's you sort of applauding and clapping now and again, but you're not really sort of running up down the sideline and getting excited. And it's like, oh, inside, I'm so excited.
yeah, absolutely. Later on, actually, a couple of weeks, I think I'm having a podcast or a chat with Richard Shorter, so the non perfect dad, who's done quite a lot of work with rugby, and obviously now starting to look at that. You know, I learned through yourselves actually at the Midlands and a little bit with Brett, but certainly a lot with James over time, that engagement with the parents, that trying to have that comms around what these guys are trying to achieve, that made a huge difference. That made a mass difference, I believe, certainly in the Performance Centre, made a huge difference for those parents understanding what these players were trying to achieve was great. And I know that Richard's got a lot of stuff that he's done on that, clickers, stuff like that, which I am messing around with at the moment, but I think we could possibly do more of, and that might be the future, is that actually through those competitions, we engage parents more around using the clickers, talking to each other, trying to get them to look at different things, not again, not the scores. So maybe they have some little challenges on board. They might not want to, and if so, then that's great. But at least then it takes them away from that over-enthusiastic approach. I like that wording. Good.
Give a quick example. We went over to local festival down at Lichfield Clubhouse a couple of weeks ago, and I've got a brilliant manager, Richard, a little plug out to him. He's really, really good at getting the information out and working with the parents and the kids and stuff. Really, really good. And he's really efficient. So we start, our first game was 11:15. So we had all the parents and the kids there at Lichfield at 10 o'clock. So they could be booked in properly and get ready to do the team preparation and stuff. And we had a big exercise, all the players doing all the strategies and plans and thoughts they're going to do for the day and goals, objectives and targets and all that, team meetings and stuff, which is as important as the actual game stuff itself. At Lichfield Clubhouse at 10 o'clock, I walked in at sort of 1 minute past 10 and went, wow, there was like 50 to 60 parents inside the clubhouse. Luckily they had bacon butties on and the coffee was going and stuff, and because it was a football festival on as well, and so the parents were there going, oh, this is brilliant, this bacon sarnies going, and the clubhouse is absolutely rammed, the boys are all in there, it's buzzing, the amount of noise was just unbelievable. And yeah. And I looked round and went, oh, there's only us here, isn't there? There's only the Derbyshire group here. So we pulled the lads out, so then once somebody booked in, we sent them off to the changing rooms and they went and started doing their goal assessment stuff. To see the buzz then around the parents, 40, 50 odd parents all sat round, chatting, sharing, looking forward to what was going to happen for the hockey for the next sort of 3 hours. Up at the pitch then, all the parents are then coming up and watching, and they're clapping appropriately, cheering on, supporting everybody, you know. So goals are going in all over the place because 7-a-side stuff, it's fabulous. It's goal to goal, isn't it? And there's goals everywhere. And though I couldn't tell you who was cheering for who and who, because they were just cheering good hockey.
Right. That's great.
And I just looked around and went, wow. You know, three counties all coming together like that. A fabulous festival. There must have been 80 to 100 parents there watching and just celebrating good play.
That'd be amazing to watch. That'd be amazing to see. Just be able to like be a drone and be able to sort of see that and show that to other people and other areas and just go, this is what they've done. We're not saying it's perfect, but it's different. It's definitely something that could easily be achieved. So
if Scott and Ed were flying over in the England hockey helicopter looking down, that would be for me the model of stuff of how it should be good. And the guys are working with the Staffordshire and Shropshire. It rubbed off, and I saw more people helping, and there's a wider community of good practice being spread around. And the tribalism of who's won, who's done that, it's going.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's definitely a positive. That's definitely a positive for sure. Okay, so we've spoken a little bit there then around Academy Centre.
Yeah.
How does the assessment process work? Because obviously they've gone through development centre, they've gone through academy centre. They now think, do you know what? How do I get into performance centre? Because that's definitely a selection criteria, not actually like a physical criteria. It's a group of coaches that come up. Now I know that this is more ongoing now across the country than it's been before, where it's not you just turn up for a day. There's definitely more assessment. So. From what I can understand is you're doing pretty much some really good stuff with this, where performance centre coaches come out, look at competitions or festivals, and you start to sort of look at the players there. Is there any other stuff that's going on? Is that how it predominantly works?
So one of the things that because historically, just jumping back, the old system of, and when the hockey calendar was in place, so you'd do your AC county training January till March with a tournament and festival at the end or whatever. No, tournament, not a festival, a tournament. and then from that, you would pick the best players and they'd all go off to JRPC. And then you'd have that six sessions in the summer, whatever. And that progress and go through. So this the new one is so much better because there's a natural level where players can transition up and down from environments which are appropriate for them.
Yeah.
The hard part we have to gauge is how do you define what is the appropriate environment for that player? That's hard. And I don't think there's a definitive answer of getting that right. Because it's a bit like all of us coaches or players. What is the right environment where you should be coaching or playing? And I've seen it sometimes where we've had players that are overstretched at PC, where it isn't right for them, and you're going. The coach inside you wants to help them and make them better and to be, feel comfortable because you want them to be comfortable in and safe and feel that they can express themselves. But then there's another bit going, is it too far? Is it too much? And are you inhibiting somebody? So you're sort of going, that might not be the right environment. And I've seen that when those players go back to AC, they grow and become more comfortable.
Yeah,
and it might be, but it's still not good enough to come back to PC at that particular point and that particular time. But you can see them expressing themselves and being more natural, and you go, "Yeah, that's so the right decision," rather than being overly stretched.
Yeah, and when we talk about overly stretched as well, it's not necessarily, and this is just my own personal perception, it's not necessarily around that overstretched skill wise, it is constant overstretched throughout that end in mind process. So self-organization, decision making, what it takes to win attitude, the highly skilled creative player, but also are they fast and robust? So, you know, how are they sort of adapting? How are they sort of coping with the intensity of the training sessions as well? How are they recovering? Those five key areas there are, in my movement from working with yourselves to working in, you know, in the Yorkshire PC, has been around chatting to the parents around that end in mind and about what I'm trying to get these players to understand, because it was pointed out to me, God, that's a great player. What is the characteristics of a great player? What are you looking at? He's got amazing hand speed. Yeah, you're right. So he's highly skilled. You know, what's his decision making like? Can he self-organize? Has he got the right attitude? Is he winning this in the right way? Is he fast and robust? You know, is he able to cope with this intensity? And some of that, you know, that team, is he a team player? That all that builds into me what I'm looking at as a performance center to coach. It's not just, yeah, he's got great skill, which I think a lot of parents look at. They generally don't look at that. And that's a general statement. That is not me saying every parent does that. I just have had lots of chats around that end in mind. And I'm just curious really of how that's
partly when I'm trying to increase that in the ACs. So there is an awareness. It's not necessarily about the player who with the fast hand or the one with the hardest hit. It's about that full package of all the qualities that we're looking for.
Yes. So a coach.
One of the things that we do with the PC stuff is that we've got a team of coaches which are either working in ACs themselves. Yeah. So probably 40-50% of our PC coaches are working in an AC environment. So they're hands on. So
that's good.
We know for sure that there's good practice being spread around and there's eyes and ears everywhere. So that's good. But what we also do is encourage a whole group of PC assessors, we go to the festivals basically, and we talk to the coaches, sometimes talk to the players, sometimes talk to the parents, and check what the environment is, how we're engaging, what's it like, what's the levels, and just get a feel for that whole environment. And that's a two-way conversation as well, so that they have an increased awareness, because there might be occasions where you're talking to people who aren't familiar with the next level, and is, well, how do you explain what the next level is, and what does it feel like?
What does it feel like? What is it? You know, that sort of stuff there. No, I think that's a really good process to have, and having seen it, you know, I would massively praise it. I think it worked really well, and the people that are coming out of PC, going to look at AC festivals, going to look at AC training as well, don't they? I know the coaches have gone to the training sessions, and just, you know, are they looking at the end in mind? Are they looking at the development themes? What's being worked on here? What is it at the right level? And you, what is the right level? So that discussion there, you know, recently done a little bit of work with the Northampton AC, and it was really interesting to see. It was definitely not an assessment of anything. That's what I did say. I just want to look at your environment and actually, what's your understanding of the end in mind? What's your understanding of the national development theme? What's your understanding of the talent development framework? And it was really key when we're having those discussions that some are quite open in the fact of, yeah, we probably need to understand it more. Some were like all over it like a rash, and you just think, that's great, but you could easily help each other here. You know, you're working in one academy.
It's going on already.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I encourage. One of the things that we do with Derbyshire is we have all day AC training. So the pitch will be going from 10 o'clock through till sort of 5, 6 o'clock, and be split between the various age group sessions. So typically, after, when I go and coach my 13s, I'll stay on and watch what happens with the 14s and 15s afterwards. Sure. And there's about three or four of us that do similar. And sometimes you do a bit of cover coaching, you go and help out, or you just give them a hand, or you just go and that mixture between mentoring, sharing, watching, and I encourage them to come and watch and see our sessions and stuff. And we're sharing. And you get that cross-fertilization and linkage then of like, because you get people going, I'm watching from the side, Kevin, I don't quite get what you're doing.
Yeah.
Well, come and speak to us. Let's have a look. We'll go through it and you'll see it evolving. And they go, oh, right, I get it now. Wow, that's that those conversations start to develop, and then when they're going off in their festivals and age group stuff, they get that cross linkage, you know, so they'll be checking things that I might have shared with them. They'll be one of our assessors there, and they'll say, so Kev was talking to me about players being emotionally durable, and we were sort of looking at that, and what's your, and then when they go and speak to a PC coach and say, yeah, that's one of the key qualities that we're looking for, oh right. And you get it reinforced, the messages, and you go, yeah, that's where you get that that cross linkage and the cross sharing.
Yeah, the cross personalization, that sharing good practice with each other, sharing each other's experiences, and also challenges. You know, I'll be honest, I've had challenges that have gone on, and people are there, and I'm going a bit stuck. Like, well, how do you think we change this? Or, you know, the boys have even given it a go at changing it and it's still not working. You know, is it session design? Is it me? Is it them? You know, what is it? So it was good to have that. And I'd be quite open. So I think that's really good what's going on at AC. Let's finally talk about PC. So performance center, you've got your three centers in the Midlands. How does that all that work then? What's going on there?
So we've got three centres, south, west and east, covering the three sort of regions of the Midlands. Fairly vibrant, and it's one of the interesting bits is from an AC world, we feed into different centres. So some counties can sit quite close geographically, can feed into different ones. So there's quite a nice mix then of, so it's quite a Midlandsy feel. So you don't have three separate centres as such, because if you were in the middle, you could end up at east, west or south.
Yeah, of course.
And one of the things that we're actively trying to encourage is about maintaining the quality and the levels across all three centres. So you might have a really, really strong AC team, for argument's sake, and we're sort of having a discussion then saying, well, is this player here, they could get into that centre, but they might not get into that centre because that one's oversubscribed already. And just trying to keep a vibrancy going.
That's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's a challenge.
It's huge. And the only way we're going to do that is, it's a tough combination. It's one of the things we were wrestling with last week when we had a chat, is we want the players to be comfortable in the environment. And we want them to be safe and secure so they can express themselves and develop and really grow. But at the same time, we also want to stretch them.
Yeah.
And we also want it to be the best it can be. So I'm very mindful of all the time of like, how do we get that balance right between not overstressing and pressuring somebody, but equally making it so that they know it's demanding.
Absolutely. Yeah. So with the performance centres that you've got, obviously you've got a group of coaches. You're quite open, aren't you, as well, which to AC coaches, DC coaches, club coaches coming in and obviously contacting you first, don't just rock up, but contacting you to say, can we come and watch a session? Which again is something that I've definitely taken over with me, is the fact of we need more of that going on so that people can come and it's not a come and see us because we're amazing. It's not that. It's a come and have a look. What's your thoughts? And do you feel that we could do more? But also, can you take some of this back with you as well? Which, yeah. You know, it's a two-way thing. We are definitely not standing there going, we're amazing, come and look at us. It's not. It's definitely not that. So
I mean, pinch a phrase off Paul Connolly here with his community of practice.
Yeah.
Which is quite a nice phraseology. I know you're leading the way with your event. Wow.
The people. Yeah. I mean, what
how many
is leading
have you got
the way?
Signed up now then?
65, 66. It slowed down a little bit, but I think it will pick up again near the event. I've had a few people say, not sure if we can make this, but we've also got more events going on now as well, which I have seen. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, community of practice is that's what that is, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
This is not mine does include an hour's worth of practical on it, 'cause it's 3 hours and we're able to get the pitch, but I know that others are just 2 hours having a chat, different yes. topics, etc. But your evenings or your day sessions at Performance Centre are a community of practice. Coaches coming to be observed, aren't they?
And that's one of the things that we sat down with Paul and we've run a couple of them. I haven't done as much marketing as you. I need to push up on that a little bit. but it's a similar idea though. You know, some sessions we might have four or five coaches there, so we've had 12 coaches and. Yeah. And we've sat round and we've discussed stuff and what's happening with your environment. And the environments are all over the place. Yeah, DCs, yeah. ACs, school coaches. What is PC? What does it look like? What are England looking for? What are the region looking for? How do we engage, help, improve, share? It's just...
Yeah.
And then it's quite... Because one of the things we were wrestling with before is how fixed an agenda do you have with that?
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, what is it, and is there an agenda? I'd even ask that question. So
I've thrown that back the other way now and sort of gone, what is it you want from me, what is it you want to know, what can we help with, rather than us sort of trying to be directive over
So what are those coaches struggling with? Because I know that, you know, I still have a really good relationship with a few of the coaches over there, the ones that I work with. And it was about, actually, we are looking at, for the next X amount of weeks, we're looking at applying pressure on receipt. So we're going to do that. Now, if you know that a coach is really struggling with that at AC level, so that they're struggling to how to gamify that or how to sort of get the best out of the players, we're putting a few sessions on. And this is what it is, because we've set out a cycle plan and stuff like that. So I think that's a really good way of doing it. Rather than just saying, just come and have a look at this, they might go, well, actually, what is it that you're delivering? You know, where you're at in the cycle. So
that's one of the things I was very conscious of with mine, because a lot of my sessions, because they're all gameplay-based sessions, if you're just watching from the side, they're just playing the game.
Yeah.
You can't tell what Kev's doing from the side. They're just playing the game, aren't they?
Mm.
Six a side, it's five a side, or it's 6v4. They're just playing the game. So I've very consciously gone, I have to communicate better to a wider audience about what we're trying to do within this game and what the objectives are and what the learning opportunities are and what we're trying to get out of it. And I found then that goes back to your clickers idea with the parents and stuff about, because we're rewarding different things, we're trying to achieve different things, incentivizing different areas and stuff. And it becomes, light bulb moment, right, got it now, right, we're working on X, Y, Z. Because from the side, they're just playing the game again.
And that's what some people don't really understand of what's actually within that game. You know, the individual targets, the team targets, the what is the theme that they're working on, what type of end in mind principle are we looking for here, what's the kids sort of feeding back into that, you know, all of that that makes up the session, rather than it just looking like this is just a game. So I appreciate all of that. I think that's some really good information for people out there to sort of listen to. One of my other little challenges around you with Performance Centre was you also have put on community of practices, again, I suppose, where you brought in people like Stuart Armstrong, haven't you, and got Academy Centre coaches, Development Centre coaches, Performance Centre coaches in a room, and you've done like a session design type of workshop, haven't you? You've done that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So how's that sort of gone down? What's sort of been the feedback in and around that?
Interesting. Yeah, it's mixed. So I was reflecting this with Paul the other week when we were talking about this community practice idea. And I said, I think we're up to about 10 or 12 now where yeah. we've done these sort of events. And it's like, but we've never really given them a title before. We've just sort of done it alongside activities to support what we're doing and maximising the opportunities. Typically, when we're on site, put something else on to run alongside it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've got the pictures, we've got the facilities, we're on site, staff are here. Why not put a little side roadshow thing alongside it? It makes sense. And then we've been fortunate to have some help from England with getting Stuart in and other presenters and stuff to really sort of qualify it. And it's, I suppose it's sort of additional CPD that's not a certificate necessarily.
Yeah. But do you need a certificate anymore? If you know, and that's certainly another podcast I'm going to chat to England Hockey around is around that coaching and the people ask about level one, level two, and then, you know, they don't exist anymore. It's definitely around workshops and CPD. So do you just need a certificate of attendance? So is that it all?
Yeah. And because that's one thing I'm very conscious of is that, we did a couple of sessions last summer with Stuart where he did session design as a title. We sort of threw that out there and it went, yeah, we'll work with that. That's fine.
Yeah,
I watched him deliver it two or three times, and each one has been different because he's bent and twisted towards the people inside the room and engaged with them and brought out what was relevant and pertinent to them. Fabulous. So each time I've gone, oh, I've learned something there. That's different. Wow. Okay. So rather than following a set script and a set PowerPoint of, we have to cover these 10 slides and we have to cover this stuff. This community practice idea was coming out with that, but within a theme. I think that's everyone that's attended, everyone that's seen stuff has gone, wow, yeah, okay. That's made me think, it's challenged me to think about what I'm doing.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's takeaways.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And that's what you want for them to have, a couple of little golden nuggets, takeaways, one or two clear points that they're going to help go back to their development centre, academy centre, performance centre, club, school, whatever it might be. Look, that's been a really lovely discussion about the pathway from development centre to academy centre to performance centre. Obviously, after performance centre, you've got like Futures Cup, you've got the DICE programme, you've got England Juniors, yeah. With the stuff like that. So, that's a whole nother discussion that hopefully I can have with Dieter at some point about how that works.
I was just going to mention that, actually, because one of the things that Dieter's really opened up on is the engagement with PC coaches and the PC head coaches about that connectivity between the two. So I'm really fortunate I'm working with a really good head coach at West Midlands, and he's been across to a couple of NAG sessions where Dieter's invited him in, and he's been viewing, observing, watching and getting to the nuts and bolts. And it's just, so as much as I thought what we were doing was pretty good, somebody else has said, well, actually, here's what we're doing at NAGS, here's what we're looking for at the next level, and just how do we reflect that, and how do we, so that learning is now being shared, so that there's a transparency up and down. That's one of the things that we were challenging ourselves with at Midlands PC. It's like, we do a lot of engagement with lower, how do we improve the connectivity with above?
For sure. Yeah, and I've got to admit, having seen some of the NAG stuff myself and going in and having a look at it was good. It was exceptional. It was very, very strong coaching. I've got to admit, Sarah Kelleher, Belly, I went to watch the girls' sessions over there. Sarah and Belly were fantastic. I've chatted with Fletcher and Rusty. They've been really positive about Jody and Mark Haveson-Bateman go doing with the same with the boys, and I'm going to actually go in February and watch some sessions with them. Really interesting about what I could take back to my own performance centre.
I'm pushing up our conversation we're having is, what does good look like? Everybody tries so hard to get it right, but what is it you're trying to achieve, and what is the next level, and what is, and it could be a confirmation of what you're doing is fab already. It's really good.
It could be.
So you might be searching for something that you're already doing, but then, okay, but haven't we, because the environment is changing all the time. That's the thing that's so dynamic. I can't remember a period of more than 4 to 5 months where things have stayed similar.
Yeah.
It's continually changing and continually moving. So, you know, trying to get a fixed point to say, I want to get to this point here in 6 months' time. Well, it's moved, it's gone on. So
no,
it's continually evolving, isn't it? Which
it is. It is. So look, we've spoken there then about the pathway, and certainly, like, if we're talking about stages, stage one, development center, stage two, academy center, stage three, performance center. Some of the key takeaways I'm taking there is the communication that you've had at development center with schools and clubs has been, you know, it was a challenge, but also it's been a part of the success. So the future, what if you had a crystal ball, what's the future going to look like for the Midlands here? Well, what are you going to try and achieve in this next sort of, I'll go easy, 18 months? What are you going to try and achieve across the whole area, if anything?
And one of the exciting bits, I think, that's is something that having coached for a fair while, and when as you start to see players now playing for the full England and GB team that have come through single system,
yep.
And I'm sort of going, right, what are the next generation of player pathway players going to be like when they start to really make an impact in the senior team?
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see that the level of game intelligence and understanding that we're getting out of 11 and 12-year-olds and through to the players we've got in this group now, what are they going to be like when they start hitting the senior squads?
It'll be interesting, isn't it?
Because, Gary, I've got 11-year-olds telling me stuff that I didn't know 20 years ago.
Yeah.
When I was half playing at a reasonable level, they're talking stuff that's just, wow, their game intelligence and understanding is phenomenal. And that's a product of the system we're creating. I get that. And that challenge then is, how do we make that system stronger, better, and really deliver that oversupply?
And that's the message, isn't it? How do we deliver that? But for me, that's pretty cool that you've got 10, 11, 12-year-old kids that are talking to you about things that 20 years ago you'd have, you know, you weren't even aware of. So, I love that. I love that. So that's great.
We've got a whole bag full of work, which is exciting that from a development point of view, England and Sally's very, and Dieter, they're very engaged with us as a region with regard to how we can do it better. Mm-hmm. You know, support from Paul and Fletch and Rusty and stuff, and is only going to help push that further. I think now we've got a structure in place, is how do we make it run better? How do we get more out of it? How do we support the kids in the right way? Because that's only going to be so exciting for what's going to happen over the next 4 or 5 years. And I think that's one of the things as well, is that sometimes in the past I've been a little impatient.
Yeah.
We started this 6 weeks ago. Why has everything not changed now? Yeah. Oh, crikey. and that goes back to that cycle thing we're almost after, isn't it, instant gratification to say, right, we've done this, what we should be amazing now, rather than going, well,
yeah, why aren't we? So
this is a generational thing, isn't it, which is going to take,
well, it takes some time to, you know, you can't change things overnight, and you know, I've definitely learned that, and there's been struggles, and you kind of think, right, you've got to look back, you've got to take your blinkered vision off, and you've got to go, right, that just because we're going to go from A to B, there's going to be that rocky journey. You know, we're going to go uphill, we're going to go downhill, we're going to take the wrong turn in somewhere. We need to be a bit more patient. And as a human being, as a sports person, I probably didn't have the best patience, and I'm now having to, you know, even though I was a teacher, my patience was still probably not what it should be, this type of environment, and this is really challenging. You know, you need your patience. You do need your patience. And I've got to understand myself better, which is great, which means the kids hopefully get a better understanding of it as well.
Yeah.
So,
and I sort of flip between the two bits. I'm really impatient about change. I want it to happen now. I want to make it the best environment possibly can be now straight away. So when we have ideas and we come up with stuff, I don't want to wait 3 years before we implement them. If it's a good idea, let's go do it now. Let's what's stopping us from doing it? How can we do this? And I appreciate things have to be benchmarked and tested and all that. But if there's something there that's glaringly obvious that we should be doing it, and we should challenge and push. Going back to the club session stuff with DCs, you can't run that session on a Sunday morning because we're doing this festival or tournament. Okay. So we'll do it on a Friday night then. We don't do anything on a Friday night. that's why we're doing a Friday night then.
No.
Oh, okay. You take obstacles away, you know, find solutions, and that's what we encourage the kids to do. I think as administrators, coaches, that's our part of our role, isn't it? Is to facilitate that.
Get it
happening. But then the other side of that is being really impatient to make change and make things happen, is then being patient with the environment that you've created to allow it to grow properly.
No, agreed. Yeah. And you do need that patience to be able to allow the development to take place. Because the only reason that you want something to develop is because you personally think it's, and the people think it's going to be better for the kids, and the kids think it's going to be better for them, and the coaches feel it's going to be better for them, and parents, everybody. So we're all agreeing it's the right thing to do. It just takes time.
Yeah.
Just takes time. Yeah. So a Monday morning, this has been just over an hour and 10 minutes of our time. I'm really appreciative of your time and talking us through what's going on in your area for the player pathway. I'm keen to hear from others what's going on for them and whether this is any use to them and the information you've given. So if it's okay with you, when we put the information online, I'll just share some contact details for you. Is that okay?
Yeah. It's on Twitter.
Brilliant. Yeah. About your, well, actually, do you want to pass over your Twitter feed name? Do you want to pass that over?
It'll go up on you.
You can't remember it. So, that's fine. Kevin, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It's been really insightful. It's certainly given me even more information about what I had about the player pathway within the Midlands area, from, you know, clubs feeding in all the way up to performance centres. So I thank you for your time. Continue to do that amazing work that you are doing.
A pleasure.
Because it's great.
I've got to say thank you as well for you for putting on those podcasts that you've done. I love listening to podcasts and it's a way of learning. I've been listening to Stuart's for a couple of years now and learned so much from them, different parts. But to have been a hockey geek, just to get a hockey specific one is it's great. It's great. And, you know, the chats that you've had with the people so far is it's a brilliant bit of work. Well done. And thank you for bringing it to life.
Thanks very much. No, it's definitely been a challenge, and it's something which, you know, I think people want, and if they do, then we'll continue to do them for definite. I'm just trying to find out what's working, what's not working, what challenges are out there, and how people overcome them, so we can pass and share these ideas, you know, a mini community of practice whilst you're in your car in some respects. So
absolutely.
It's been great. So thank you once again for your time. Thank you. Take care.
Speak soon. All the best.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.